Side 2. Chapter 5. A Surprise for Beth. Laurie and the four girls were soon great friends. Mr. Brooke complained to the old gentleman that his student was always running across to see the marches.
"Let him have a bit of a holiday," said Mr. Lawrence. "He can catch up with his studies later."
What good times they had! Writing and acting plays, happy evenings at the marches, and little parties at the big house. Only Beth was too shy to go there. When Mr. Lawrence heard about Beth's shyness, he came to have tea with their mother one day and began to talk about music and great singers he had heard. Beth found it impossible to stay in her corner and came to listen.
"Laurie hasn't much time for his music," Mr. Lawrence told Mrs. March. "So the piano is not used very often. Would any of your girls like to play it sometimes? They needn't see or speak to anyone, and I'll be in my study."
He got up to go.
"But if they don't want to come..."
At this moment, a little hand touched his own. It was Beth's. I want to come," she said, her voice shaking. "Very much."
"You're the musical girl," said Mr. Lawrence, gently.
"I'm Beth. Yes, I love music. And I shall come."
The next day, Beth waited until the old and the young gentleman both went out. Then she ran across to the big house and found her way to the room with the beautiful piano. As soon as she began to play, she forgot her fears immediately in the delight which the music gave her. After that, Beth went every day. She never knew that Mr. Lawrence often opened his study door to hear her playing, or that Laurie stood in the hall to keep the servants away from the shy little girl. But she was so grateful that she asked her mother and sisters to help her make the old gentleman a pair of slippers. After several days' careful sewing, the slippers were finished. Then Beth wrote a short letter and, with Laurie's help, left it with the slippers in the old man's study one morning before he was up. The next day, Beth went out for a walk, and when she came back, the others were waiting for her.
"Here's a letter for you, Beth," they called out. "Come and read it."
She hurried to the house, and they took her into the front room.
"Look there,"
everyone was saying at once. Beth looked and got the biggest surprise of her life. For there stood a lovely little piano with a letter on the top of it, addressed to Miss Elizabeth March.
You read it, Joe," whispered Beth. "I can't."
So Joe opened the letter and began to read.
"Dear Miss March," she read, "I have had many pairs of slippers, but none which have pleased me so much as yours. I should like to thank you for your kindness by sending you something that once belonged to my little granddaughter, who died. With many thanks, I am your good friend, James Lawrence."
Joe put an arm around her sister.
"Now, try it, Beth," she said.
Beth sat down and began to play, and everyone thought it was the most perfect piano they had ever heard.
"You'll have to go and thank him," said Joe,
with a smile, knowing that Beth was much too shy to do anything like that. But Beth surprised them all.
"I'll do it at once," she said bravely, and away she walked, through the garden and into the big house next door. She went up to the old gentleman's study and knocked on the door.
"Come in," said Mr. Lawrence.
Beth went in. "I came to say thank you, sir," she began in her quiet little voice.
But he looked so friendly that she ran and put both her arms around his neck and kissed him. The old gentleman was so surprised that he nearly fell off his chair. But he was very pleased indeed by that shy little kiss, and soon the two of them were talking like old friends. Later, he walked home with Beth. The girls, watching with great interest from the window, could not believe their eyes.
"Well," Meg said, "I do believe the world is coming to an end."
Chapter 6. Amy in Trouble.
"Where are you going?" Amy asked Meg and Joe one afternoon. "I want to come, too."
"You can't, dear. You're not invited," said Meg.
"You're going somewhere with Laurie. I know you are."
"Yes, we are," said Joe. "Now stop annoying us."
"You're going to the theater,"
Amy said suddenly.
"I want to go with you."
"We could take her, I suppose," began Meg.
"No, Laurie only invited us," said Joe.
"I shall go,"
shouted Amy.
"Meg says I can."
"You just stay where you are," said Joe angrily.
"I'll make you sorry for this, Joe March,"
Amy shouted as Meg and Joe left the house. The two older sisters enjoyed themselves at the theater, but Joe couldn't stop worrying as she wondered what Amy would do to make her sorry. She found out the next afternoon. Beth, Amy, and Meg were sitting together when Joe ran into the room.
"Has anyone taken my notebook?" Joe asked.
Meg and Beth said no at once, but Amy said nothing.
"Amy, you've got it," said Joe.
"No, I haven't,"
said Amy.
"That's a lie," said Joe. "Tell me the truth or I'll make you."
"Do what you like," said Amy. "You'll never see your stupid book again because I burned it."
Joe's face went white.
"What? But I worked so hard writing my stories. I said I'd make you sorry, and I have," said Amy.
Joe jumped at Amy and shook her shoulders.
"You wicked, wicked girl," cried Joe. "I'll never, ever forgive you."
And she ran out of the room. Mrs. March came home and heard the story.
"Oh, how could you do that, Amy?" she said. "That was Joe's book of stories. She wrote them all herself and was hoping to make them good enough to print."
Slowly, Amy began to understand the terrible thing she had done and started to cry. Later, when Joe appeared for tea, Amy begged her sister to forgive her.
"I shall never forgive you," Joe answered.
It was not a happy evening, and when singing time came, Joe remained silent.
Afterwards, she kissed her mother and said, "Good night. My dear, don't go to bed feeling so angry with your sister," whispered Mrs. March. "I'm sorry, Mother. I can't forgive her," replied Joe. Next day, Joe wanted to get out of the house, so she picked up her skates and went next door to ask Laurie to take her skating. Amy heard them going. "Joe promised to take me with her next time," she complained. "It's hard for her to forgive you, Amy," said Meg. "Go after them, and wait until Joe is enjoying herself, then give her a kiss, or do something kind." It was not far to the river, but Joe and Laurie were already skating when Amy arrived. Joe saw Amy, but turned away. Laurie was carefully skating along the edge of the ice and didn't see the younger girl. Amy put her skates on and stood on the ice.
"Keep near the edge. The ice isn't safe in the middle," Laurie called to Joe. Then he disappeared round the first bend in the river.
Joe heard, but Amy did not. Joe realized that Amy probably hadn't heard, but she said nothing and skated after Laurie. Let Amy look after herself, Joe thought. Amy skated out towards the smoother ice in the middle of the river. Joe reached the bend, and for a moment she stood still, a strange feeling in her heart. Something made her turn round, just in time to see Amy throw up her hands and go crashing through the ice into the cold water. Amy gave a cry that made Joe's heart stop with fear. She tried to call Laurie, but her voice was gone, and for a second she could only stand and stare at the little blue hood of Amy's coat above the black water. Suddenly, Laurie skated past her and shouted, "Bring a piece of wood from the side of the river, quickly!" Wild with fear, Joe fetched some wood and pulled it across the ice, while Laurie held Amy's head above the water. Together, they got her out. She was more frightened than hurt, and was quickly taken home. They covered her in blankets and tried to calm her, and after a little while she fell asleep in front of the warm fire. Later, when everything was quiet, Joe asked her mother, "Are you sure she's safe?" "Quite safe, dear. It was sensible to get her home as quickly as you did." "Laurie did it all," said Joe. "Mother, if she should die, it will be my fault. I get angry so quickly. Oh, why can't I be more like you?"
"I get angry nearly every day of my life, Joe," said Mrs. March. "But I've learned not to show it. I've learned to stop myself saying the angry words that come to my lips. And you must try to do the same, my dear." Amy moved in her sleep, and Joe looked at her.
"I refuse to forgive her, and today she nearly died. And it was Laurie who saved her. How could I be so wicked?"
Joe began to cry. Then Amy opened her eyes and held out her arms with a smile that went straight to Joe's heart. Neither of them said a word, but they held each other close, and everything was forgiven and forgotten.
Chapter 7. Meg Hears Some Gossip. Annie Moffat did not forget her promised invitation, and one April day, Meg went to stay at the Moffat's large house. Meg thought it was wonderful. She loved riding in fine carriages, wearing her best dress every day and doing nothing except enjoy herself. She soon began to talk about fashionable clothes and hairstyles in the way that the other girls did. And the more Meg saw of Annie's pretty things, the more she wished that she, too, was rich. Annie's older sisters, Belle and Clara, were fine young ladies. Mr. Moffat was a fat, friendly gentleman, and Mrs. Moffat was a fat, friendly lady. They were all very kind to Meg and did their best to make her feel at home. When the evening for a small party came, Meg's best dress looked very old next to Sally's new one, but no one said anything about it. The girls were getting ready when a servant brought in a box of flowers. "For Miss March," she said, "and here's a letter."
"What fun! Who are they from?" said the girls. "We didn't know you had a young man."
"The letter is from Mother, and the flowers are from Laurie," said Meg, simply.
"Oh," said Annie, with a strange look. Her mother's loving words and Laurie's kindness made Meg feel much happier, and she enjoyed the party very much. Annie made her sing, and someone said that Meg had a fine voice. So Meg was having a nice time, until she heard someone say, on the other side of a large table of flowers,
"How old is the Lawrence boy?"
16 or 17, I think," said another voice.
"It would be an excellent thing for one of those girls," said a third voice. "Sally says they are very friendly, and the old man thinks they are all wonderful."
"I expect Mrs. M. has made her plans," said Mrs. Moffat's voice. "But do you think the girl knows of them?"
"She told that little lie about her mother, and her cheeks went pink. I'm sure the note was from the boy, really. Oh, poor thing. She'd be very pretty if she had some nice clothes. Do you think she'll mind if we offer to lend her a dress for Thursday?"
"I shall ask young Lawrence to come, and we'll have some fun with her afterwards."
Meg tried to forget what she'd heard, but could not. The gossip made her angry, and she was glad when the party was over and she was alone in her bed. She cried quietly to herself. Why did people have to say those things? She and Laurie were just friends, but now that friendship felt damaged by the unkind gossip. The next day, Miss Bell said,
"Meg, dear, we've sent an invitation to your friend, Mr. Lawrence, for Thursday."
Meg pretended to misunderstand.
"You're very kind, but I'm afraid he won't come. He's nearly 70.
Miss Bell laughed.
"I mean the young man."
"There isn't one," said Meg. "Laurie is only a boy."
"Isn't he about your age?" said Clara.
"Nearer Joe's," said Meg. "I'm 17 in August."
"It's nice of him to send you flowers," said Annie.
"He often does, to all of us," said Meg. "My mother and old Mr. Lawrence are friends, you know."
"What will you wear on Thursday?" asked Sally.
"My white dress again. I haven't got any others."
"No others?" said Sally.
"How funny!
I have a pretty blue dress I can't wear any more, Meg," said Belle.
"It will please me if you wear it."
"You're very kind, but..."
began Meg. "Please do," said Belle. "You'll look quite beautiful in it."
Meg couldn't refuse this kind offer, and on the Thursday evening, Belle helped to change Meg into a fine lady. She brushed and curled her hair, reddened her lips, then helped her to get into the sky blue dress. The neck of the dress was cut very low, and Meg was quite shocked when she saw herself in the mirror. A necklace and earrings were added, and Meg was ready for the party. At first, she felt strange in all the fine clothes, but she soon discovered that people who did not usually notice her now came to speak to her. Several young men who had only stared before now asked to be introduced. Suddenly, Meg saw Laurie across the room. He was staring at her, and he didn't look very pleased. Meg began to feel uncomfortable, and she wished that she had worn her old dress. As she walked up to Laurie, she saw Belle and Annie watching them both and smiling. "I'm glad you came," Meg said to Laurie in her most grown-up voice. "I was afraid you wouldn't."
"Joe wanted me to come and tell her how you looked," said Laurie.
"What will you tell her?"
"I'll say, I didn't know you, because you look so unlike yourself. I'm quite afraid of you," he said.
"The girls dressed me up for fun," said Meg. "Don't you like it?"
"No, I don't," came the cool reply. Meg became angry.
"Then I shan't stay with you."
And she walked off towards the window.
A moment or two later, an older man went past her, and she heard him say to his friend,
"That girl has been dressed up like a doll."
"Oh, dear," thought Meg. "Why didn't I wear my own things?"
She turned and saw Laurie behind her. "Please forgive me," he said. "Come and have something to eat."
Meg tried to look annoyed.
"Please come," he said again.
"I don't like your dress, but I do think you are wonderful."
Meg smiled and found it impossible to stay angry with him.
"Please, don't tell them at home about my dress," she said. "They won't understand that it was just for fun, and it will worry Mother. I was stupid to wear it, but I'll tell them myself."
"I won't say anything," he promised.
He did not see her again until supper time, when she was drinking wine with two other boys.
"You'll feel ill tomorrow if you drink much of that, Meg," Laurie whispered to her.
"I'm not Meg tonight," she said. "I'm a doll who does crazy things. Tomorrow I'll be good again."
Meg danced and laughed and talked to as many young men as she could manage, but went to bed feeling that she hadn't enjoyed herself as much as she had expected. She was sick all the next day, and on Saturday went home, quite tired of her fortnight's fun.
"I'm glad to be home," she said to her mother and Joe, after telling them how she was dressed up like a doll, drank too much wine, and was ill afterwards. She had laughed while telling them the story, but her face still looked worried at the end.
"There is something else, I think," said Mrs. March, smoothing Meg's cheek, which suddenly became rose red.
"Yes," Meg said slowly. "I hate people saying and thinking awful things about us and Laurie."
Then she told them the gossip she had heard.
"What rubbish," said Joe. "Just wait until I see Annie Moffat. How stupid to think that Mother has plans and that we are kind to Laurie because he is rich and may marry one of us one day. He'll laugh when I tell him.
No, Joe, said her mother. You must never repeat wicked gossip.
Do you have plans, Mother? Asked Meg.
All mothers do, dear, said Mrs. March. But my plans are different from Mrs. Moffat's, I suspect. I want my daughters to be loved, and I want people to think well of them. I want them to marry well, but not to marry rich men just because they are rich. I'd rather you were poor men's wives, if that meant you had happy, peaceful lives. But your father and I believe that we'll always be proud of our daughters, whether they are married or single.
You will! You will! Said Meg and Joe, together.
End of side 2.